is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
As I was watching the Mariners game yesterday, Brock, and yes, maybe occasionally slipping in and out of sleep, it was, after all, a Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the image. Did you get to watch the game yesterday? I know you were sort of right around.
You know, I was watching a lot of basketball.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I started watching the baseball game. I was like, I don't care that much. I'm going to start watching the baseball game. But so I'm watching yesterday, and Logan finished up his four plus innings, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And after that fifth inning, you know how they kind of take off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was Logan, but then he was flanked on all sides by Luis and George and Bryce and Brian and all five starters. They had the shot from the back of all five of them walking towards the exit together.
Pretty cool.
It was just, for some reason, it just struck me as pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some interesting things over the years here in Seattle, right? Remember the year that, it obviously went poorly, but the year they put together Felix and Cliff Lee at the top of the rotation,
yep.
And then the rest of it was still pretty good after them. It was like, Vargas and Pfister and I want to say Bedard even at the kind of like the end of that. It was a pretty good rotation. This group of five guys,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw the Macho Cuatro, right? We saw what it looked like with Robbie and Nelson and, you know, kind of the heart, Kyle Seager, the heart of that order.
Yep.
This group of five pitchers, if they can stay healthy and the two young guys start to develop the way I think they can, they could be really special. They really could be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's there. It's not like, well, this has got to happen and that's got to happen and he's got to come up from AA and he's got to, you know, stay. No, this is there. This group is there. And this group was largely all there over last season. Now guarded with Wu and it didn't, you know, those guys, Bryce and Brian, didn't obviously start the season, but by year's end, they were right there in the mix in the most important month as they were vying for a playoff spot. And we kind of thought, well, maybe Wu's going to be shut down. Nope. He's going to stretch all the way to 130 innings. So this group is there. I mean, this is a starting five. We're in kind of basketball, you know, heaven right now. It's like the greatest time ever for basketball. And you look at starting fives and you could think of the starting five with the Fab Five. You could think of the starting five with the UNLV running Rebs from the 90s. You could think of the starting five for UMass. Not many of us can. Lots of these Gonzaga teams through the years, you can go through their starting fives,
yeah.
And kudos to them for their ninth straight Sweet 16. But this starting five, Salk, this starting five's got a chance to do nothing. That's something that's never been done in this franchise history and largely never done in baseball.
Mm.
To be this young with The Rock kind of leading the whole way, but the rest of them being this dynamic,
yeah,
this
youth,
young, and this
the
productive.
The youth movement element of it is really cool. And as I kind of think through all those starting fives you mentioned, the one that probably jumps out is Juwan Howard, Jalen Rose, Chris Webber, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson, the
Boom.
Fab Five.
Dude, way
right?
To go.
Yeah,
way
dude,
to
don't
go.
Worry about that. I mean, those names are going to be seared into my brain until I die.
Do you have the running Rebs?
Geez, I don't know if I could do the whole thing.
Anderson Hunt. Greg Anthony.
Stacy Ogman.
Larry Johnson. And then the big, what was his name?
I don't remember the last guy.
Oh, he was 6'10".
I know,
big.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I got like 4 out of 5 on that one, but not, I don't have the whole one there. And then, yeah, certainly I could give you all those UMass teams if you need them later.
Could.
Dana
sure.
Dingle and Dante Bright and Marcus Camby and Lou Rowe. Yeah. Anyway, this group's going to be good. They're going to be very, very, very good. And if they can stay healthy, and I think there's still some questions about how Wu develops and how Miller develops and sort of what they're able to do against lefties kind of moving forward. But I don't know, that image of them struck me as I was watching it and then kind of seeing the offense kind of what it looks like when it all clicks, which is what it's done here for the last 10 days or so. It kind of feels like when this offense works, it's going to almost like roll over pitchers like a wave. Does that make sense? Because I don't think they're going to bash you to death. I don't think they're going to come anywhere close to leading the league in home runs. But I think they're going to just when it kind of feels like a like when you're kind of getting tossed around in the ocean and it's wave after wave after wave. Right? Remember being a little kid and you're trying to like stand
kind of like those
up
Astros
little...
lineups or the
yeah.
Rangers lineups are usually the teams that kind of win consistently are the ones that just don't have all of a sudden a huge hole. Where, okay, if I can just get through these waves. right, and gets calm water, because there have been some calm waters at the, certainly in April and May last year with this lineup. Like, oh, great. Now we got so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, you know, there aren't that many so-and-sos in this lineup.
Yeah.
And every one of them, to your point, kind of sting you and hurt you.
So if it does work that way, I don't know, gut feeling about this team is that they may be a little bit streaky. I get the sense that maybe when they're going, they're going to look invincible. Honestly, that they may blow some teams out because the pitching is great. And I think when this lineup clicks, it could score a bunch of runs at a time. But if and when they get hurt, and we know they got a lot of guys with injury issues on here, I think that could be a challenge, right? And I think they'll be able to withstand a couple of position player slumps because, as we said, they're deeper. But I'm going to guess they're also not going to have those games where you find a win because you just managed to hit a couple of home runs and kind of steal one. Yep. They're going to have to actually hit, I think, in order to win. So I think they may end up being a little bit more streaky than we've seen.
Last year?
Yeah.
I mean, remember, last year they did not have a losing streak of more than four games.
Yeah.
Houston did. Texas did. Everybody else did. You did not have a losing streak of more than four games. Yeah. And some of that was, you know, you're pretty elite pitching. I know you want to hit on a little breaking news that Maura just sent, by the way.
I do. I also want to tell you, George Ackles.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's from my buddy Chris.
Yes.
There you go, Chris. We got you. Shout out to you. George Ackles was the final guy on that team.
I knew that.
Our guy Pete Thamel, breaking news here moments ago. Washington State coach Kyle Smith has accepted the job at Stanford, sources tell me and Jeff Borzello. He led Washington State to a 25-10 record this year and the school's first NCAA tournament bid since 2008. Yep. Yep. He's the former head coach at San Francisco and Columbia.
Yes. So Columbia, San Francisco, Bay Area. I said to you, Molly, looked at him and thought, wow, he's kind of a nerdy looking dude. Yep. So where's a perfect fit? Play a little nerd ball down there at Stanford. So yeah, that's a bummer, man. As I said earlier, it's a good thing that this tournament has been healthy financially for the Cougs, but you know what's coming. And you know, and I think a lot of people got eyes on Pat Chun now, the athletic director there, right? With the UW job.
So sad, man.
Huh?
This whole thing is sad. Because it feels like they're picking the Cougs apart, like for spare parts.
Yes.
Like they're just like, okay, well, that car died. So, hey, can we use, I don't know, any parts of a car?
So it's like a wrecking yard.
Yeah. What are some parts of a car that somebody might use? Like an alternator?
Sure.
Yeah. There's an alternator over here. There's a radiator over here.
Spark plugs.
Spark plugs over there.
I don't think you're going to pull any old spark plugs out of a car. But yeah, I see your point.
You can't pull a spark plug out.
I don't think you would. I don't think you want those.
Shocks.
Go get some new ones pretty
cheap. Struts.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Some suspension pieces, there's some A-arms.
So there is only one thing that the former commissioner of the Pac-12 conference that said, you know, when I'm in these alumni council meetings and together, and this wasn't Larry, this was George that followed him. There's just one thing that stuck with me that he was absolutely right on. He was wrong on many things. He was wrong on reading the room. He was wrong and listened way too much to some of the hubris within that room and some of the people in the conference that thought they were so valuable and were so much more than they ever were. But there is one thing when I asked George Kliakoff to his face, what have you learned on this job? Mm. You came from some billion-dollar businesses, man. You came from big business. You're now sitting in this commissioner's seat. You're trying to save a conference. You ultimately couldn't. What is the one thing that has struck you the most? And he didn't hesitate. And it is rung totally true, and it's everything you just said. He said, there is nothing collegial in college sports. I went in believing and thinking and the perception that we can be collegial, that we can work together, that we can be for the betterment of the student athletes. And he said, it is as bad a business as any of the businesses I've been in. And man, are we seeing that come to life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you knew this was going to happen, right? But it still stinks. And, you know, for all the Cougs that we know a lot of Cougs,
yes,
really, really passionate folks. And maybe the basketball team will kind of find new life as a mid-major. Like, that's possible in basketball in a way that it's not really in football. And certainly, you know, looking just a few miles north to Gonzaga and what's going on in Spokane shows you that it's possible if you can follow the right model and get the right coach and kind of play to your strengths. But this stinks. And you know, you knew it was going to come. You knew it's going to continue. But to actually see it happen still is just It's awful. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back with everything you need to know. Joel Klatt is going to join us in 20 minutes. He'll be another one who's going to be mean to me. Mm-hmm. So hopefully between him and Maura, people have been very mean to me. Mm. Just going to say it out loud. Yeah. And my kids.
What did I do?
My
and
wife.
And Lefko. I mean, Lefko is really the meanest.
Lefko's the one that dragged me.
I'm so done with this. We'll come right back. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
All right, opening day just 3 days from now, and the Mariners cleaned out of Arizona yesterday. It was time to go. They were done. They had had more than enough. All the interviews on the field yesterday, you could tell. They're like, okay, we're ready to go. This is enough. Let's please start this actual season. They will after a couple of games in San Diego. Of course, Thursday, they'll get underway at home. Luis Castillo gets the ball against the Red Sox. Yesterday, though, was Mitch Haniger doing damage again.
Left by Moore. Here's big drive. Left center field. Headed for the berm. Goodbye. Home run, Mitch Haniger. Boy, did he get into that pitch.
He sure did. His fifth of the spring. You know what? A really nice day, though, yesterday. And he's been sort of the one player that has not been there with everyone else.
Justin's guy.
Luke Raley.
Yeah, Justin's guy.
Maybe he's starting to find his timing, which has clearly been off for the majority of the spring. Had a double, had a triple. He can run around a little bit. Yeah, that was important.
It's really good to see Luke Raley, you know, pick it up here the last probably 3 or 4 days. And played him a lot. Hopefully he can find his timing and rhythm, and he certainly did. So we're ready to depart Arizona. It's been a good spring. It really has. With all the new faces and everything else, getting everybody acclimated to what we do. Like where we're at offensively, I think we've done some really good things the last couple weeks, and we just need to continue.
So we've just been the breaking news show over the last couple weeks. We have been the breaking news show, and before that breaking news came in on Kyle Smith, you were talking about these Mariners maybe being a little streaky. They're going to maybe be a little streakier than they've been in the past. I think Luke Raley is going to be one of those guys. Hmm. I think we're just going to have to endure. He's a swing and miss guy. He's got a high whiff rate and all that stuff. But he's going to be somebody that wants to play and needs to play. And when he did consistently for the first time in his career at the big league level and was able to work through some of those ups and downs and peaks and valleys, was a pretty productive player for the Rays last year.
Well, they do, as I said, have two in San Diego. They open up Thursday. Luis Castillo will be on the hill against Brian Baio.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the good vibes for the Washington State Cougars after they made the tournament, won their first round game, they lose to Iowa State on Saturday, and now the news comes out that head coach Kyle Smith is on his way to Stanford to be the next head coach of the Cardinal. It's not a surprise that he's leaving. It's not a surprise that, you know, this program is essentially going to be picked apart by all the other teams going and staying in the Power Five. But it just stinks.
Yeah, I'll be curious about a number of their really talented people and coaches. Pat Chun is near the top of that list as an athletic director. Did not get the Ohio State job. Washington, I would believe, and I think I could say confidently, is talking to him. I don't know whether or not he would pursue that or want to make that kind of move with everything and all the history of the last year with the president of the University of Washington. So we shall see, but you're absolutely right. The good news, the program and the athletic department's made a bunch of money through the success of the conference schools in the tournament, men's and women's. The bad news is the vultures are going to circle, and they're going to pick apart and take the very best and brightest from that school.
What do you call it? What are the vultures called? Carrion? Isn't that what they're called?
They're called committee.
No, but aren't they carrion, like C-A-R-I-O-N or C-A-R-R-I-O-N, carrion bird, something like that?
Is that what it is?
I don't know. They're going to pick through this. Gonzaga moves on to the Sweet 16. Congratulations to them. They beat Kansas. Blew them out, really. And then the women's bracket has been awesome. South Carolina just destroyed whoever they were playing yesterday.
North Carolina.
Oh, man, did they blow their doors off. Iowa, LSU advanced. Although both had a little trickier first-round games than maybe they were expecting. I guess LSU was their second-round game. It was a little tricky. But
Iowa tonight against West Virginia.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun.
The finale there for Caitlin and a bunch of those seniors in their own home arena.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Kraken sure look like they've quit. It has been a brutal stretch of 8 straight losses here. It started with that bad one that kind of took them out of the playoffs against the Knights. And then after that, it's just gone from bad to worse. Watching, I had missed a few of the games, so I was just watching for the first time in a few last night. Mm-hmm. They look like they quit. Mm-hmm. There was no effort, and it didn't take much to notice it. Dave Haxtell said the same thing.
You play this game with passion. You play it with heart. You play it for the guy next to you, and we're not doing that right now. And that's more than disappointing. It's hard to be part of, and that's something that we're going to change.
Well, especially in a sport and a profession, Salk, where I think we can all agree, out of the pro athletes, those tend to be the most selfless. Mm-hmm. Those tend to be the hardest workers. Those tend to be the most sacrificial and humble. And for your group to not do it, yikes. Yikes.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. It's a bad situation there. And, we'll see where that ends up going. Shohei Ohtani's scheduled to talk later today. We will fill you in once we know about that. That is everything you need to know. Thank you to my friend Shane, who texted me. Carrion is the decaying flesh of the dead animal.
I thought
it described meat-eating birds, but that makes a lot
more sense.
I did too,
but I think they're called carrion birds.
Vultures, yeah.
Right?
Got it.
But it's carrion. Yeah, there you go.
Boy, you sure had a lot of friends texting.
Carrion's ranked.
Good for you.
Yeah, we're going to be ranking carrions. Carrion's ranked.
You got the George Ackles help. Yeah. You've got the carrion help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, whatever you say, whatever you question, it feels like you've got a million, who wants to be
nice.
A millionaire lifeline out there.
Nice. Yeah. Hey, guys, I just want to tell you I'm going to win $1 million. Don't need your help. All right.
I was just going to say, I don't think we should give short shrift to Gonzaga for the 9th consecutive year. I know we got a lot of listeners over there in Spokane. I know we got a lot of Cougs and a lot of Zags and just a lot of fans over there on that side of the mountains. So for 9 straight years, they have made the Sweet 16, not just the tournament, for all of these years. And you could say what you want, the West Coast Conference, and they've got a direct path and this and that. Yeah, you still got to get to the tournament and win again. And survive in advance, past that first weekend now, and for 9 consecutive years to do it for Mark Few. And in this group, right, this is a group that many just kind of clowned on and thought, here's their rebuild. They're really not going to be the Gonzaga of old. No, they're pretty darn battle-tested. I like their bigs. I love their point guard. I love the way they share the ball and just play team ball.
Anybody else jump out to you in the tournament that you've watched, any other team or player where you're like, oh, that guy's fun, or that team's pretty good?
Gosh, I love the intensity and the magnitude of the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the beauty of this sudden death tournament. No, I mean, Houston is just unbelievable defensively and had 4 guys foul out last night and just kind of crazy. Iowa State, who beat Wazoo, is so tough.
Yeah.
I feel like this tournament, honestly, has as many tough teams.
Yeah.
You've got old teams.
That's kind of what I was noting. Just, like, it seems really physical.
So physical.
I watched Purdue play. I mean, they got that big giant dude, 7'4", but like they were pretty physical. Wasn't just hit. Like, there seemed to be a lot of physical teams in the tournament this year. I wonder if the Cougs had made it a different year with this same team, if they could have gone farther. That unfortunately their style of being sort of physical like that.
Yep.
It unfortunately
ran up to the epitome of it in the 2-seed in Iowa State.
Like, there were just more teams built like that this year, so it didn't surprise anybody in the tournament the way it would have in another season. Like, man, we've been playing run and gun basketball, and this team just beat the heck out of us.
There certainly is still some run and gun, and there certainly is a lot of 3-pointers that are shot, but it doesn't feel finesse. It feels like, man, there are going to be a bunch of these teams that are so, so tough and so physical. And, man, it's made it fun to watch for sure.
That's very, very true. All right. Joel Klatt's going to join us. The last time he was on, he was just outright mean to me.
Just honestly say, Joel, I sometimes, take words of wisdom, and I went back and watched a lot of tape, and you're totally right. JJ's a stud. So I think you should
start. Are you encouraging him to lie,
No,
bro?
Because then he's just going to be like, no kidding, Salk. Of course he is.
No, what he'll do is he'll say, oh, really? What games did you watch? How did you dig into that?
Penn State I watched, and Maryland. All right. We'll come right back with Joel Klatt, Sprock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Fun time of year with opening day now just 3 days away. Of course, you got the tournaments going on and men's and women's college basketball. And we're not that far from the draft either, Brock. Just about a month away from the NFL draft. So what a great time to chat with our friend Joel Klatt from Fox Sports. Joel joining us now. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Good. Are you are you with us today? We're gonna have another difficult conversation. Is everything gonna be all right?
Maura, you set him up for this, didn't you? This is, you know, I was saying that you were a little mean to me, I thought, the last time, and it took me some time to recover, obviously, from how badly you beat me up here on the radio. But
Brock and I texted about this.
Yeah.
And he felt bad for you. I didn't. So I thought there was an appropriate amount of, you know, animus towards some of the things that you were saying, but
see,
overall,
he and Brock texted.
Really well.
You're blaming me.
Yeah, well, I blame you and Brock. You're like a like a team out to get me, basically. You know, Joel. After we talked, I went and did the research that you wanted me to do.
I'm sure you did.
I was just being honest. You asked me if I had seen that game, and obviously I had not. And so I did the research, and then I kind of started to fall in love with J.J. McCarthy. And now I'm kind of mad at all of you guys for ever making me even think about this guy, because there's no chance the Seahawks are going to be able to get him.
Got it. So you and my 12-year-old could have a nice little outdoor lab blaming everybody else for your own inefficiency.
Yes, that's exactly
fine.
Right. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Listen, all joking aside, I think that it was very easy for all of us who watched or covered the sport to kind of put JJ specifically into a bit of a box because of the way that Michigan wanted to play. And they wanted to play that way, and they did play the way that they did, not because of JJ and his skill set, but in spite of that. And he could have been a guy that threw for 3,500, 4,000 yards. He's got that type of ability. They had a wide receiver that could have been an 85, 90 catch guy and gone for over 1,000 yards in Roman Wilson. They've got a tight end in Colston Loveland that could have been, you know, a 50, 65 catch type of guy. But that's not the way that they wanted to play because their philosophy was different than that. They wanted to play with extra tight ends and extra linemen and create extra gaps and control the game so that they could play a complementary style. They have great special teams, they have great defense, and they wanted to make sure that they were getting the best out of every unit. Because of that, JJ wasn't asked to do what other guys were asked to do. That doesn't mean he can't do it. It just means that it has to be a little bit more of a projection. Mm-hmm. I think the more that I go through, you know, this process, the more I'm convinced that we're going to have four quarterbacks taken in the first five picks, that JJ is going to get selected most likely by Minnesota. And I believe will trade with either Arizona or someone up there at the top to go and get him.
Yeah, that certainly is where some of the momentum is going. So, Joel, one of the advantages...
Just real quick, do you think that he'll be as good as he may be?
Man,
do you think he's
now
worth
you're
that?
Just like my 12-year-old, interrupting other people. This is incredible.
Great.
No, go ahead. You took the floor, please.
Do you think he's worth that?
I do. I think that his top-end potential is there. I think what people are really starting to love is if you put on, and this is where the benefit of like a cut up happens. If you just put on his third and long tape, just third and long, you get this very different picture of what he is rather than just watching base down. You know, on base down, you're going to see him hand off duo like 8 million times in a row. That's a run concept, by the way, Saul. And you know, on third and long, though, you see him reading the field, creating with his legs, making tight window throws. And you're like, man, is this the same guy? And that's the momentum that you're seeing. As you dive deeper and you get into cut-ups and you see him in two-minute situations, you see him in the red zone, you see him on third and long, that's when the NFL scouts are sitting there and those front offices are saying to themselves, yeah, this guy absolutely is worth a pick up there at the top.
Which is why the Seahawks went out and did what they did. And knowing that JJ was not going to be in their plans and went out and traded for Sam Howell, and I want to ask you about him in just a second. But before I do, you saw Michigan how many times last year?
I don't know about – oh, gosh, last year I think it was seven. But I do know over the last 3 years. So since COVID, it was 16 games that I've done of theirs.
Okay, so you know this roster inside and out. You and Gus. By the way, we had Gus on a couple of weeks ago, Joel.
Oh, yeah.
How was Gus?
Well.
He was really nice to Salt. No,
I might have gotten you in trouble.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I might have gotten my revenge because I asked him about Scotty.
Yeah, he didn't like that. He did not like
it. I was like, yeah, Joel told us about Scotty, and he was like, well, he did? I'm going to punch him in the face. Like, he's pretty mad at you, it sounded like. So I'm not really going to apologize because I was really just getting back at you for how mean you were to me the last time you were on.
Right.
But he was not psyched that you told us his secrets about
that's
Scotty.
Fine, but let's just say beyond that, you know, what did he say? Seattle was his girlfriend or something, his lover?
He called his baby girl.
Yeah, Seattle's his baby. Joel, it was a far-ranging
powerhouse interview, I got to tell you.
Baby girl, Seattle, I miss you, baby, and I'm going to get back to see you as soon as I can.
Yeah.
There he is. Oh, man.
He was in full form. So
I love it.
Yep. He was an absolute blast. But he knows Michigan's roster from a certain level. You know them inside and out because you have seen them so many times. The Seahawks, Mike McDonald, is a former Raven, have not brought one Raven in. And I said to Salk in our little Blue 88 segment last hour, I'd be shocked if we don't see a Wolverine or two that's drafted or brought in here because of Jay Harbaugh, because of all the familiarity, because this staff knows their guys inside and out. Who would be a few of the Michigan Wolverines, if JJ's off the table, that you would say, oh, yeah, for Mike McDonald, for John Schneider, for all new coaching staff, for Ryan Grubb, first-time NFL coordinator? Yep, these are a couple Wolverines that you have to have on your roster.
Well, I would look towards the defensive side, and I would look towards a guy that Mike knew really well and saw blossom into what I would consider to be the best defender on the best defense in college football a year ago, which is Mikey Sainristil. I thought he was the best nickelback in the country. And that defense, so when Mike first got the job at Michigan, I was fortunate enough to have like some really long meetings with him, which was weird. As you know, Brock, like I thought one thing about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh and their meetings, and they were always really short and almost contentious at times before COVID. I'm not joking. After COVID, though, it just flipped. It totally changed. It was wild. We got all sorts of access, and guys would sit there, and there was no time limits. I sat with Mike McDonald the first time I ever sat with him for over an hour. On a Friday, it was wild. And we talked about philosophy and we talked about the way that he wanted to build this defense and what Jim Harbaugh had in mind and what he was instructed to do as the coordinator for the Wolverines. And he talked about the philosophy, and in its simplest form, obviously there's a lot more to this, but in its simplest form, he talked about building a run wall with the interior of the defensive line, building very hard edges on the edge of the defensive line. So think of Aiden Hutchinson at that point. They were going to cater to a guy like Hutchinson. It just so happened that they have this David Ajabo that kind of comes on as well, and they've got these two hard edges for Mike McDonald. And then he talked about having hybrid players in the middle of the field and lockdown corners. And when he talked about hybrid players, he talked about nickel and linebackers as guys that have to do everything really well, whether it's cover or stop the run. They just have to be great football players in the middle of the field because they've got to be able to stay on the field regardless of personnel, regardless of situation. Can't be shuttling in and out specialists on defense. Generally speaking, got to have a core group of guys out there that can play and match up with all sorts of different situations and personnel groups. And Mikey Sainristil is a guy that was a wide receiver, switched over to nickelback, and I thought he became, in the last 2 years, their best defender. I'm really high on him, loved him as a person, and because of that philosophy and needing those hybrid-style players, I think that Sainristil would be an interesting pick.
Do you think that is more collegial, where there is so much more up-tempo, where the field is a little bigger, where that middle of the field stretches, or do you think that plays into what he wants to do professionally too?
Well, I think it's still professionally because that what Jim wanted was what the Baltimore Ravens was doing. He came in and said, hey, John, I need your defense. Give me two guys that can run it because of all of these things. Mm-hmm. And I do think that you have more time because of the huddle to match up. But that being said, you know, even when I watch the NFL game, if in college you're in nickel 85% of the time, and I think you would agree with that on defense, yeah. I think in the NFL it's still north of 65% of the time.
Yeah.
So that's more, you know, the nickel back, if you will, has become more of a, quote, base defender than, you know, the Will or Sam linebacker in a lot of cases. So, you know, from my standpoint, I think that Sain Ristil holds a ton of value, even at the next level. And his ability to disrupt the game and impact the game, I think, is really strong. Well, here's a comparison, and I don't want to directly compare him to these players, but in the same vein of these guys that are creative impact players on the defensive side of the structure of their own defense, Sain Ristil had mini version, JV version of kind of like an Ed Reed style impact, because he could do everything on the field, and depending on the situation and the offensive formation and concept, his instincts would take over and he was always around the ball. That's something that Jesse Minter and I talked a lot about this last year at Michigan, and I think that's something that Mike McDonald would appreciate if he was in Seattle.
It will be interesting because they got a pretty good nickel. I mean, the best football player last year on the Seahawks defense was their first round pick. And everything that you just said about Sain Ristil to me is Devin Witherspoon. And, you know, but maybe Devin is that lockdown corner.
That's a good point.
I mean, maybe Devin.
I haven't even thought about that.
Well, but maybe they say, hold on a second.
I feel like a sulk because I wasn't really.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything about that, Joel, but as you were talking, I was thinking was.
Go ahead.
You mean like Devin Witherspoon? Because I feel like I kind of got that. I mean, you know, did you watch the Seahawks play last year?
Yeah, I did. I mean, not at length, certainly.
No, I'm sorry. You missed out.
I will tell you, there's some other players, too. You know who else would fit in that? And I would be interesting on your opinion on this, Brock, is Junior Colson, the linebacker. I think that he would be interesting.
I've heard his name a lot.
Yes.
A lot of people have kind of mentioned him as a potential. Where is he gone by the time like the second round comes? Like where does I've seen people say first round, third round, second round. Where do you think
he's
he goes?
I don't think he's a first round player. I think that in the back end of the second round, I think he would probably be there. Maybe early in the third round, depending on, because remember, what we don't know is how quickly all those wide receivers are going to come off the board. That's a lot of slots that they're going to take up. So we'll see how that happens. And if that happens, what you're going to see is other position groups get shoved down the board and later into the draft.
Yeah. So at that draft in a little bit over a month, you're going to be sitting up there with Daniel Jeremiah, great buddy of ours, great guy, Rich Eisen as well. And Rich was on the show last week. And I'm very curious now where you're falling. If QBs go four out of the first five, Daniel Jeremiah's last mock had a certain southpaw from Montlake going right there, 12, 13 to the Raiders. Are you feeling a Michael Penix is going to be drafted in the first round kind of vibe now?
Yeah, I do. I really do. More I talk with people, and this is a guy that I've really loved, even back, you know, before the season. You know, he was, I think I categorized him as my dark horse Heisman even before the year in August. Here's what I love about Michael Penix. What I love about Michael Penix is that this guy is like, he's like a card counter in Vegas. In the sense that he is constant in a position to play with the odds in their favor. With his not just accuracy, but also pitch selection. The way that he puts pace and tempo or layers the football down the field. And then always seems to put the ball on the opposite side of the defender. So when I watch the film, I'm seeing Polk and McMillan and Adunze, and they're always adjusting and making great catches. I'm not saying especially Adunze. But they're always in a position where the defender can't quite get to the ball because of Penix's ability to throw the ball with leverage. And I even shudder at saying throw the ball. He passes the football. there are guys that are great throwers of the football, and it's beautiful, and it's beautiful, and they can be successful as quarterbacks. But Michael Penix is a great passer of the football, and when you pass the ball, you always throw away from the defense and with great leverage. I can't get Miami out of my mind. Like, I just think he would fit so perfectly in Miami. They could get away from all of the RPO stuff that they have to do to fit Tua, and they could really leverage the defense down the field and play on top of the defense, which would open up their run game. It would open up the deep end cuts, which if you have speed like Tyreek Hill, that's the route that actually does business. Yes, it's great to go over the top and create big plays and explosives, but if you need a first down, if you need to get to the sticks, what you need is vertical stretch in the defense so that you can in cut at the chains. That style of offense, I think, would actually work better for Miami than what they were doing this year with Tua. I can't get Miami out of my mind for Penix. I think he would be so perfect there.
Talking to Joel Klatt here on Brock and Salk. So if you were in the Seahawks' shoes and you've got Geno Smith back for at least one more year, and we'll see after that, you just traded for Sam Howell. How are you handling that? What do you make of Howell and his potential long-term to maybe unseat Geno?
You know, at some point you got to close your eyes and picture the confetti falling and think to yourself, like, is that the type of guy that I could see, you know, with a Lombardi trophy in his right hand? And unfortunately, I just don't see that with Sam Howell. That doesn't mean he can't be a good NFL starter, but, you know, are we just trying to be wild cards here, or are we trying to go and actually like win a Super Bowl? I know that that's a high bar and that seems critical, but you know, Sam Howell is a fine NFL player. I just, if he's your quarterback, I don't think you're trying to win the Super Bowl.
Do you feel that way with Geno?
Yes, exactly. Verbatim.
Yeah. So kind of the same
Seahawks
thing.
Are not a Super Bowl contender right now. They're just not. And because they don't have the requisite quarterback play to do that. They just don't. And it's one thing you could say, like, well, Joel Russell wasn't that when they won the Super Bowl. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But also think of how cheap Russell was and the roster that they had around him. Think of how dominant the Denver defense was in Super Bowl 50 and the roster they had around an aging Peyton Manning, okay? Seattle doesn't have that right now. They don't have the roster around an average quarterback to say to themselves, yeah, absolutely, we can go and compete with San Francisco. You're not even the best team in your own division right now. So at that, like, no, these quarterbacks are not the answer. They are placeholders. And until that is fixed or the roster is completely overhauled to be a roster that can compete with San Francisco toe-to-toe, then, you know, then they're just playing out the string.
Well, so I totally agree with that, by the way, which is
whoa.
Yeah, no,
whoa.
You and I are very much on the same page with this, but
dangerous.
What do you do then? Because with the 16th pick and no second rounder and now only one third rounder because of the trade for Sam Howell, they're not going to be in the market for any of those five quarterbacks that you mentioned. What do you, and by all accounts, next year doesn't sound like that's the class for it. What do you do if you're John? Are you desperate enough to try to just mortgage the future to try to get one of the quarterbacks this year? Do you wait? What do you do?
Only if you feel like you have a roster that is just a quarterback away. If you don't feel like that, then you need to start tearing pieces down. That's the only two ways to go about it. You either have it or you don't. And there's two things that prevent teams from ever going into one of those two categories. And the first, at least in my estimation, would be the purgatory of the NFL, which they're in the middle of the first round. If you are just an average NFL team, it's created to be 8-8. If you are 8-8, you're screwed because you don't have a pick to actually get better. And you're just in this spot where you're like, well, are we a piece away? Could we do this? Could we leverage for that guy? You know, and so I call it the purgatory of the NFL if you're sitting there right in the middle. And then the other aspect of this is that the life cycle of coaching staffs is so fast that none of them want to sit there and say, like, okay, well, we'll be here in 6 years, so let's start tearing it down. It's like, do you really want to do that if you're a coaching staff? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a great answer for what Seattle should do.
Well, it sounds like
I can tell you this, though.
You might be interested.
I can tell you this. Chicago is in a position where they are going to be really good really soon. You look at the pieces that they had this last year and now what they will have next year, and it's real easy to see them being a team that is improving and has a future that has a trajectory towards the top end of the NFL.
You might be interested in my pet theory, which is the trade DK Metcalf theory, that if you are trying to do what you just said, the one player on this roster who's got some real significant value in a teardown situation like that is DK. And you're spending a lot of money on what might be the best wide receiving core in the league, but without the rest of the roster around them to help.
Okay, here's another one, and Brock might scream at me. There has not been a Super Bowl champion that has won the Super Bowl because their best offensive player is a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's never happened.
That has never happened. So this idea that all these wide receivers hold their organizations hostage for massive contracts, it blows my mind. It blows my mind.
Well, you're just blowing Salk's mind. You know, we got to go. Joel, we got to go. You're blowing his mind.
They are the most dependent position on the field, Brock. The most dependent position on the field.
Get him, Joel. Get after him.
They can't do anything unless everybody else does their job.
Thank you.
I can't stand it.
Thank you.
Great. You've got DK Metcalf. Good for you.
Thank you. What does that do for you? Thank you,
nothing.
Joel. Joel, you're invited back. Yes. I feel like we've redeemed ourselves now. I feel like you and I are now back on the same page.
Well, we'll see. We'll see the next time I see Gus.
I know.
And then maybe not.
Here
maybe
you
not,
go.
Zulk.
Here's what Gus said.
Well, you know what? Joel Klatt, I'm going to punch him in the mouth because he's giving away my secret.
So, this may end up breaking us up when it's all said and done, or maybe it'll break up you and Gus. You
know. Well, let's be fair. You didn't just say, hey, what about this guy, Scotty? You're like, I understand. Scotty's your hype man. I understand he's the one that gets you going in that booth.
Yeah.
And that's where you kind of cross the line. So,
well, I expect nothing else from Salt. He's like a 12-year-old with a microphone.
I've got a 12-year-old. Maybe my 12-year-old will have to meet your 12-year-old at some point. They sound kind of different. But
thank you, Joel.
Please,
girl.
God, no.
Bye, Joel. Thank you. As always, later. There's Joel Klatt. For better or for worse. For better or for worse.
You two. I mean, it's one thing with passing. You guys go back decades.
I know. I've never met Joel.
You've never met him.
No.
And yet there is just this.
Boy, do I know a lot about Mikey Sanrasil now. That was a good
request.
15 minutes on Mikey Sanrasil. Thank God.
We had a text request to get passing and Klatt together for a Salk roast for 20 minutes.
Oh.
You know what the funniest thing is about the Mikey Sanrasil thing? Because he spent almost as long talking about him,
you love him
as your guy Marvin Demoff did talking about nothing the day he came on.
You love him.
I love Mikey Sanrasil.
Love him.
Watched him in those two playoff games and was like, that dude is the best player on the field. I loved him. He's from Everett, Mass. Like, he's a Massachusetts guy. As soon as he said, I was like, wait, isn't that the guy that I really liked?
Yep.
So, Joel and I are actually, sometimes people that are similar tend to butt heads. So maybe it's that. Whew. Man,
you can't have two lead guitar players in a band.
That's
talked
true.
About this before.
And he's much better at it than I am. That's for darn sure. All right. Coming up next, Brock, are we starting this today?
We are.
The Brock Heward player profile, draft profiles.
A lot of history in this.
Every day at 9 o'clock.
A lot of history if you go back through the years of some of these guys we've talked about.
Well, hang on, because you guys are going to hear it next. If you're a draft fan and you want to know what the Seahawks should do, stick around and listen to Brock. It's coming up on Brock and Salk.